nervous?
No.
Where's your answer?
Dennis Beckham, that's the ball on! Dennis Beckham! Dennis Beckham! Dennis Beckham! Dennis Beckham!
Oh, no! Oh, yes! He missed it!
Welcome to the Suffering from Joy podcast. My name's Devin. Austin FC have 3 points from 4 games. But we got there. 2-2 draw against the Philadelphia Union. No Seth today. He's trying to survive St. Patrick's Day in Chicago, so we wish him the best of luck. But join me today to discuss it and everything else going on. Brad Tillery. Brad, how are you?
I'm all right. Just getting up for the day. You know, slightly encouraged by last night. Not going to go over crazy, but, you know, there was encouraging signs at least.
Yeah, still a lot of meh, but definitely some positives to take. Also joining us, Charles Peacock of the False Nine Texas. Charles, how are you feeling?
Doing okay. Lost my voice a little bit from being at the match, but I'll power through.
All right. Nobody got injured in the smoke box fire yesterday, because that was a great start to the day.
As far as I could tell, no, but that was right in front of where I was sitting. I'd never seen the stadium support have to bring out a ladder and then attempt to blow out the smoke box fire.
That's not how that works.
He had an extinguisher and made the choice while he was on the ladder to try to blow it out. And then about 5 minutes later, the smoke box got taken away. And then in the second half, it got brought back. And the fire marshal saw it and immediately yelled at somebody and then stormed off.
Okay, yeah, that was a good metaphor for her a bit of the season so far. It's part of the reason I'm not super worried that the I'm now on the front office's wanted list, as I think you two know, but letting listeners know that after a we'll call it a spicy email I sent to them about the U.S. Open Cup ticketing situation. So yeah. We're all doing great, and people who light boxes randomly on fire to and almost injure their own fans are the people coming after me. So that's great.
Yeah, I'm heard. I heard Andy Loughnane was at the FC2 game on Friday night. I was at the Spurs game, and I was like, heard he was there and spoke to talk to him. I'm like, he's probably glad I wasn't there, considering the amount of times I've sent pissed off emails to that front office or blown them up on Twitter for different things right about now. So
it's a nice experience. I normally like to work in the shadows, but I definitely got some interesting looks from people in suits at the FCTO game, so maybe maybe there's a like one of those crazy wanted lists they have in detective movies or something, or like you're throwing dartboards at the criminal org as they're going for all of us these days.
No, your LinkedIn profile picture is definitely on a bulletin board somewhere in the office.
Yeah. All right. Well, you know, I have a quip, but it's going to make me sad about misfiring strikers, and we're just not going to do it, because we did get a goal from a striker yesterday. We now have 5 goals on the season, and one of them is from a non-defender. So progress. We're moving up progress in the world. What'd you say?
Progress. It's progress.
Yeah. It's what we're doing here. We're driving the snakes of not scoring goals out of Austin FC or something. I don't know. That's the best I'm doing with that one. You guys want to talk about the game?
Why not?
Sure. All right. Well, we already talked about the smoke box a little bit. So started with a shit show about 10 minutes in. There's more of a shit show. So very, 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 very not any way in hell a foul call against Valencia on the edge of the box. Philadelphia Union take a free kick. Looks like it deflects off the wall because they kind of do one of those like 1-2-3 touches. They didn't take it direct, so we had time to have guys run out and try to cut down the angle and block the shot. Ball goes out for a corner. Everything seems normal. And then all of a sudden the ref is tapping his ear and holding up play, and Philadelphia Union end up with a penalty. And Charles, I'll get your take here first. What did you think either inside the stadium, and have you watched it back yet?
So inside the stadium, it definitely looked like it took a weird bounce or kind of like a weird ricochet because of Philly's just I guess free kick routine is what we'll call that. But I never think that like hitting the ball slightly to somebody ever works because of how defenders rush out. I watched the broadcast replay last night and I was trying to find like another view of it. And just based on the footage we saw, I don't know how you can definitively tell that that's a penalty either. Cause I don't think you can definitively tell where Alex Ring's arm is, if it's inside or outside the box. Like, I'll give that it's like, by the definition, it's a handball because his arm is technically outside of his body frame, but there's no way to tell exactly where he is.
Yeah, like, and that ball's coming super fast from super close. His hand's not in a crazy position, but yeah, it's away from the body. Sure, we can make the like technical argument about it. But there's no angle I saw that looked, you know, one way or another. If they went, hey, it's penalty on the field, I don't think you can look at it and overturn it or anything. But saying there is a, and you know, maybe they have different angles we don't get on the broadcast, but saying that there's a clear and obvious error, that's a penalty, is fucking ludicrous to me. How about you, Brad?
Yeah, I'm with you on, I don't know that there was a clear angle on where the handball happened. I'm not so with you on a couple of, on one other thing though. I don't know that it wasn't a clear cut foul. Like, I went back and watched it last night too when I got home, and I can make an argument for a foul. For me though, the problem wasn't necessarily the bad call by the ref or even the handball, which I know we can say, well, the handball led directly to a goal. The problem goes back about 10 seconds before the fall, the foul. Guillermo Biru put us in a shit spot for all of that to happen with a pass across our box that I don't think I've ever seen a professional try. And that led to the panic from the back, a quick turnover that cascaded into the foul. Biru was terrible last night. So for me, it's easy to go, well, the ref screwed up here or the handball happened, but that all cascaded from a shit decision from Biru in his first start.
So I noticed, too, not just on that play, but on kind of generally his entire 45 minutes, either he was expecting somebody to be somewhere they weren't and they weren't to show for him, or he has no idea what the hell he's doing, or some combination of the two, and he's trying all these different things to get out of jail, and I don't know what's going on, but it wasn't great.
I thought it was a little combination. There was one play I specifically remember where he saw Danny with space in the channel. But Danny was pointing out wide to Emmy, saying, go there because you have room. We're going to run it out that way. And he still tried to play in Danny with his back turned while Danny wasn't really looking at him. And it was an immediate turnover. So I don't know that he's either understands how they want to play yet, or if he just sees different things that our team doesn't see. It's one of the two.
Yeah, I'm sure some of that's like betting into, and you know, he's a little bit of a kind of creative flair player. So maybe he's just trying to do too much because he doesn't see anything and like the system's breaking down, which I think we can all agree is definitely happening. We're trying to play those balls kind of up the side, but the wingers are sometimes too narrow, or there's nobody free, or there's only one outlet and the other team keys on it and covers it. There's all sorts of things going on, but yeah, that doesn't mean you have to kind of like whack one across your own box.
Yeah.
and get everybody else in trouble.
Yeah, one of the interesting things I noticed in the first half was that every time Austin passed the ball to the midfield, Philadelphia already had a player on them to compete for the ball or to steal it away immediately. And to the point that like you could just tell that they were just keyed in on exactly what passes we wanted to make and just were ready to spring the trap every time.
Philly, yeah, that's in the first half, like watching them from my angle, the most impressive thing about them in that first half was how they moved together when they were pressing, whenever we would get possession in our own half. It wasn't just a press to stay on you. It was a very coordinated way of playing. It was almost just watching them. I'm trying to figure out like synchronized swimming in a way, right? Like, they all went the exact same way in the play they were supposed to go. And we had no answer for that in the first half. It was impressive to watch.
Yeah, I like that you're confused about this, because this is sort of a major tenet of how total football is supposed to work too, that we ostensibly play, is that all of the parts kind of know what the other one's doing and they're interchanging and moving as a unit. And I mean, you know, everybody who coaches this has some sort of metaphor, like one brain or, you know, individual parts, you know, one mind, hive mind, that sort of stuff. So it's a, and I know you're kind of newer, you haven't been watching quite as long as we have, but it's kind of funny to hear you say that after 3 years of Austin FC, you were that impressed with it.
Well, yeah, I mean, we'll talk about our defensive breakdowns later that have been happening for 3+ years. So,
yeah, I guess on the plus side, we didn't have to watch any Zardes Tim Parker foot races this week, but which I believe was going to be my moment of suffering if we had managed to get out an episode last week, which listeners, we didn't due to a little bit of a scheduling error. But yeah, all right. First half was kind of a disaster. Biru and Valencia, who I didn't actually think was that bad, hooked at halftime. I mean, anything else you guys want to talk about in the first half? It was just sort of bad, like standard bad for me.
Yeah, it was the same thing we've been seeing all year for me.
Yeah.
You know, I told people I was getting off the train because I took the train down to the game yesterday and I got off at the Kramer stop as opposed to the stadium stop. And a few people looked at me like, why are you getting off here? The stadium's there. I'm like, I need a beer before I go watch this.
Yeah.
Because I just kind of felt like that's what I was walking into. And the first 45 were more of the same. We talked Biru already. He was atrocious. Ragone was god awful, not just for 45, but all night long. And we had no creativity or way to get out of the back, really. You know, we struggled to get the ball into the attacking half for that entire first 45 minutes. We had one or two decent attacks, and that was about it. I felt we were lucky to get out of that half 1-0.
Yeah, we had one kind of nice little break where Rubio gets the ball and it's maybe like a 3-on-3 or something. He drives towards goal, takes a shot, and, you know, pings it way over. But it was actually like people are upset that he didn't pass it. But
he had three options and he chose the absolute worst option.
Well, he did. But I'm not going to hate a striker for taking the ball to the net and shooting.
Fair.
We don't have enough of that at all. Charles, do you have something you want to add?
No, I want to echo Brad's points that it was bad. I thought the other thing that wasn't mentioned enough is how Rubio wasn't able to get the ball or retaining possession, which has been kind of like his strong point in the argument to keep him as a starter over Zardes in the first half. And whenever we don't have that, like, you can just see how the entire attacking structure breaks down. To me, that's always the biggest key. And then the counter to that is usually whether or not we have Valencia, whoever's playing the six by themselves, or if we try to have the two midfielders. And to segue into the second half with the changes made, I thought one of the things that helped Austin the most was a switch to having a double pivot with a more of a true 10 as opposed to a six and two tens.
Yeah, I think we're still kind of feeling out that quote unquote style, we'll call it, in the first half a little more than we're letting on. I do want to roll back for a second, though, and talk about the penalty again. We all kind of said, you know, clear and obvious, not on the broadcast. Did either of you see any of the Montreal-Chicago Fire game?
Yes.
Did you
see... That match was...
Sorry, yeah, okay.
That match was awesome.
If you're an MLS sicko, go back and watch this.
This is where we need Seth on today, because he was...
Yeah. It's a full MLS sicko match that ends with, a wind goal from the half line in the 100th minute or something.
On that wind goal. Yeah. All right.
No, oh. I was saying, I had a couple of friends there, and I texted them, while I was watching the second half, and just put, holy shit. And then when they got back from the match, they put, what's great is that I don't know which holy shit moment from the second half this is referring to.
So Andrew Weeby tweeted out late last night. He goes, I'm a sicko and had to go look this up. At the moment of that goal, it was the highest wind of the match, and it was a gust of 40 miles an hour.
Nice. I mean, that's too...
On Twitter, somebody in England had... You know, MLS posted the highlight. And somebody in England had posted, is that keeper just stuck in cement? And I'm like, dude, did you watch where the ball was aimed, kicked, and then where it actually ended up?
Are you kidding me? Because the ball was sent towards the sideline. And it basically took a boomerang shot back into the net. It was crazy.
Yeah, like, don't get me wrong, it's a keeper error, but it's not like Tarbell throwing the ball in our own net bad. Like, it's sort of an understandable one. That happened a few years ago, too. Tim Howard actually scored from his own, like, box when he was still playing for Everton, but it was basically like he kicked it long and like he got weirdly hung up on the in the wind and like bounced and went over the opposing keeper and went in. And then they were, you know, interviewing after the game and they were like, oh my God, Tim, what a great goal. And he's like, no, like, I just feel bad for the other guy. That can happen. Like, that sucks. I'm not going to rub it in.
Yeah. I mean, I grew up playing baseball, right? And if you've ever played baseball on a windy day, the ball's going to move some on a pop up or a pop fly. It makes it tough. But soccer ball is a lot more aerodynamic in that respect. And it's easier for the wind to grab a soccer ball and just let it go and take it and lift it different places. So I'm not all over that keeper. I guess it's technically an error on him, but that's a hard damn ball to track when it's blowing 40 miles an hour.
Yeah. I'd put it like error, but understandable error.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. He just kind of made that like classic outfield mistake of like, going back to baseball, of just like running in too quickly.
Yep. I came too far and now I don't know what to do.
Yeah, because once you have to like change directions on a pop fly, you're done.
Yep.
Just as a general rule. And I thought it was, he wasn't under that much pressure. Like, he definitely had the time to sit and wait, but you could tell he was just like, just the programming of like, okay, I have to come out and get this and get it at its highest point and blah, 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 like took over. And that's just a recipe for disaster in those conditions.
Yeah, and I think he realizes he's in trouble too late. Because with how high that is, that's recoverable. See. Like, just get back on your line and, like, you know, whatever, live to fight another day. But he doesn't notice it until way too late.
You can almost see his exact oh shit moment if you watch the replay.
Oh, yeah. Very easily. Among a bunch of oh shit moments, there was a really weird red card that leads to a penalty. And this is kind of going back to like the penalty awarded to Philly. Like, I went back and watched that on the broadcast. They don't show any angles. If you like super zoom in on some like grainy thing, you can kind of see a dude maybe lashing out a little bit, but no great angles or anything. And, you know, end of the story, ref goes to VAR, gives a red card for an elbow at a penalty for violent conduct. But like, there's nothing in the TV pictures that shows you anything useful. You're like, oh, that's what happened. I can kind of like squint and see it on the replay, but like nothing that you're just watching it and you're like, oh my God, that's definitely an elbow, like clear and obvious error or anything like that. So I didn't know if you guys like had a better angle than I did or found anything like that or any explanation whatsoever.
No, I mean, even the announcers during the match were confused. Like, they were like, you could tell that like the crew truck, like the director was like trying to find the angle. They were going through all the cameras and they just could not find it to show like what happened there. Yeah, it was a crazy match. And I have to say, like, as part of like MLS Sickos, like, it was great.
Yeah, but you know, that's the match. I think I had put out a tweet last night late after our game about referee decisions consistently in this league over these first few weeks are materially changing games, and they're pretty bad decisions. And that was really the one I was referring to more than anything last night.
Yeah. And I think they're escalating too. And we'll do a little bit more of the referees once we get towards the end of the game. But like, there were some bad calls in our first couple matches. It's like, you know, whatever, you missed a foul, you know, that was actually a goal kick when it should have been a corner, whatever. That sort of stuff actually happens with standard MLS refs too. But it's just gone through the roof in the past 2 weeks.
Yeah, last night was, I thought, the worst referee game we've had all year.
Yeah, I don't know. The City one was pretty bad too, but I'm also still a little salty because that Tim Parker flying forearm to the back of Rubio's head was right in front of me. And that somehow wasn't his second yellow card.
Yeah, I feel like the replacement refs are bad in like very specific ways. Like, yeah. I feel as though they tend to let a lot more go when two players are competing for a ball or they're kind of like in a position of shielding the ball. And that's kind of where I mean, the biggest thing that you notice with the replacement ref so far is how many times players from opposing teams are getting into like shouting matches or like seeming like they're getting like amped up for a fight. And that seems to happen every match now, when I feel as though like that used to not be a thing.
Yeah. O'Brien was about to like, you know, follow that one dude to the parking lot last night. I think it was O'Brien.
Yeah. And you know what? It was O'Brien, because he got up after getting fouled and was.
I mean, the guy cleaned him out.
He was ready to throw. Throw hand, which I was very much laughing about. Yes. But it was also nice because between him and a little bit of shithousery from Diego Rubio up top, like it was nice to have a little bit of that fire back that I don't feel like we've had in a long time.
Yeah, and I think that was kind of my major like positive theme / takeaway. You know, not only are we like looking a little fiery and like we care, but like Philadelphia wanted that game over. We were the ones who were pressing for a goal at the end, and it's 2-2. So, you guys want to talk about second half?
Sure.
Two changes. Owen comes in for Valencia, and Zan comes in for Biru. And I think most people in the stadium were like, I don't know what this Biru guy is doing, but it's making me very nervous, so they weren't too upset about it. About 7 minutes into the half, Sand goes down again, doesn't look good. He looks very upset on the field. I know that was pretty close to me and probably closer to you, Brad. Right leg, which I think was the same knee he messed up before in a pretty serious way.
It was non-contact.
Yeah.
I mean, it happened right in front of where, just about right in front of where we sit. It looked like it happened. He had the ball at his feet and he made a cut back into his right. To get past the defender, and it looked like it happened right on the cut, because he went down immediately, and based on his facial reaction that you could see from where I was sitting, he was in immediate pain and kind of knew what was going on. So
yeah, that was the I've done this before, I can't believe it's happened again anguish that you see in athletes sometimes.
Yeah, seen that before, and that's what screamed to me.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, hopefully he's just getting over those kind of injuries psychologically is sometimes harder for players than the physical side. So I did notice they were working his hamstring a fair bit, too. They were looking at his knee, so hopefully it's a, you know, he popped a hammy, he's out 3 weeks, and it's not another major season ender or anything like that. But tough one there. Then we brought our secret offensive firepower super weapon that everybody knew about before the season on Hector Jimenez. I mean, that was definitely in the pregame show. We all had him as our top offensive threat, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So I do have to ask, I'll start with Charles. What was your thought when Hector trotted onto the pitch and we did flip him back so that Gallagher was on the left again?
So I actually think Hector helps in a lot of ways, because the system, and we don't see this that often with Austin, is that like a lot of this system involves your fullbacks getting into the attack and being able to like play and kind of play ones and twos with midfielders and et cetera. And I think Hector's really good at that. It just Hector's not good at like a lot of the other things that the fullbacks are supposed to do. So in a situation where you're kind of looking to attack more, I think he makes a lot of sense to bring on. Even though we don't like as fans like think that because he's just because of like his age and kind of what we've seen. I will also say that like that dude that dude's balls to attempt a bicycle kick with the goalie right next to him and right next to the goal was possibly my favorite moment in the match, because that would have been the most ridiculous like bicycle kick of scoring from like 0.1 yards out ever.
So I was semi-happy that didn't go in, because I was pretty sure he was offsides.
I mean, sometimes offsides shouldn't count, and that's a situation.
No, I totally agree. That would have been one of those where it's like, unless you're, you know, 9 yards offside, that one's going to count.
Yeah. So my immediate thought when I saw Hector come in, I looked at my buddy who came to the game with me. He watches games, but, you know, doesn't really – he's still learning, just like me in a lot of ways, but – I'd say even more so, he's still learning about the game. And I told him, we just got a lot worse defensively. when Hector came in, which I don't think is wrong, because if you go back and look at the second goal we gave up, oof. But I was pleasantly surprised with the infusion of offense and forward movement that Hector brought to the team. And it seemed like it brought some calm on that right side too, for the way we moved on our fullback positions. Galley looks more comfortable on the left. I know he played mostly as a right winger when he played the wing, but as a fullback, he seems better suited on the left for us. And I think there's a legitimate argument that you run that fullback pair next week in your starting lineup and you sit Biru after the performance he had yesterday.
Yeah.
I don't think that's crazy at all.
Yeah.
Like, I think that actually makes a lot of sense. Like, I think the thing that is the thing that's weird about that is that Gallagher always looks more comfortable playing as a left fullback. But when you go back to like last season, he scored all his goals from the right. But I mean, you can just see like it works better when he's on the left. It just does.
Yep. Yeah. And, you know, and it also allows him to cut in just like he did last night with his preferred right foot and get a clean shot on goal. You know, because he kind of followed up the play last night and was able to poach one from the top of the box, which a guy with his skills who has been an attacking player for most of his life, that's a nice luxury to have for us.
Yeah, and I think that's one of those natural progressions you just sort of see that comes out of necessity. Like, we had to play him as a left back a fair bit because that's the only place we could get him on the field, and we didn't have any backup left backs. He was the next best option, and you sort of like see that inverted foot and when he comes inside, and it actually ends up working out better than just, you know, get to the byline and send it across, which is, you know, partially obviously to clear the ball too from the outside while you have your strong foot on the outside normally. But yeah, on the offensive side, it's definitely helpful for him. I do think too, it helps us play those kind of more slender balls up the midfield. Yep. Instead of just chunking it down the line.
Well, and you know, later this year, when Dessler gets here, really the question becomes, who's your left back starter? Because I think you have, at that point, depending on the injury to John and how bad it is, let's assume he's available, you now have three options at left back, depending on what you want to do. But your best two might be Dessler on the right and Gallagher on the left.
Yeah. Let's solve today's problems. That's fair. And then worry about the summer. all right. Well, goal one, nice play. And, you know, like you guys said, Hector's kind of coming in and breaking towards the box, sends it across. I watched this back last night and I couldn't tell if it took like a very, very, very tiny deflection from the front defender trying to close him down or if it's just a really nice cross into a dangerous area. But yeah, he just pops in into a dangerous spot and Rubio goes and finds it. Philadelphia defenders kind of get crossed up trying to not kick it in their own net. Just buries a header straight through the keeper.
So there was a deflection off a defender.
Okay.
On the ball in, it took a slight deflection off a defender, before it hit the bounce that Rubio took the header off of. But at the same time, it was still a really nicely played ball by Hector, just kind of a direct cross that puts the keeper in no man's land and forces the defense to make a play. And when the defense didn't make a play, we're there to pounce. So it was nice to see because we really haven't had that from our fullbacks.
Yeah, and I do like this sort of as an MLS tactic. You know, you don't have to do it every time you touch the ball, but a few times a game, just smack a dangerous early ball and go see what happens. Because you see plenty of, like, you know, I watch other games, I watch CCC, you see, like, just weird, put the ball in a dangerous area and good stuff will happen, almost like the hockey maxim, put it by the net and something will happen. That stuff happens in MLS and CONCACAF play, so, like, you know, give it a couple tries a game, and maybe you'll come up with something like this.
And we had two runners there, right?
Yep.
So
yeah, there's somebody else behind.
It was Ring. Ring was right on the hip of Rubio.
Yeah, and I mean, it's a well-taken header, too. Like, you maybe look at the goalkeeper because it goes, like, straight above his head, but that's 2 feet away, and he bullets it. So we got a striker goal. And our, I think our kind of signature new offensive signing, I guess I would call him, from the offseason, gets that goal. Did you guys feel pretty good then? Or were you like, oh, yeah, striker goal, cool?
No, I feel good about it. I mean, I felt good about it also because, like, it was kind of, like, right after the subs were made. And you could just kind of tell that the team just, like, was looking and playing different. And that's kind of the biggest thing you want to see when the manager makes subs. Going back to your point about just, like, playing the ball behind, I mean, a big part of Austin's problem of scoring is that they attack set defenses too much, and they wait for defenses to get set. And even at the MLS level, like, you have to do something to make the defenders move or to make them run at their own goal just to get them out of their comfort zone. And I thought that was something that Owen actually did really well yesterday, of making horizontal runs that force the center halves to get up and create space behind them. And so that, I don't know, it just seemed like a portent of the future when you make subs and immediately you score, or almost immediately you score.
Yeah, and then we do it again, what, 90 seconds later? Something like that?
That's the first time we've ever scored a goal while still celebrating the previous goal. Like, I think that's the first time we've scored during, like, singing "All Right, All Right, All Right" after a goal.
Well, we can make it happen again. It's a nice feeling. We kind of talked about it a little bit already, but some nice 1-2 between Hector again, and Owen has a nice ball across. I don't know if this technically counts as an assist, because I think it, like, nicks somebody else on the way. It's an assist in my head.
It nicked Alex Ring's toe.
Yeah.
Across.
I had a great view of this, Brad, I think you did too.
Yeah.
Of the way Gallagher approaches the ball, and he's just like, striker goal, I'm curling this bottom corner. Like, 3 steps before he even makes contact, I was like, this is going in.
Yeah. it was very clear. Galley was played it right. He was nobody there. He had plenty of space in front of him before we could see. And yeah, the moment he left his foot, I was already celebrating. The ball was in.
Yeah. And all of the people in green celebrated the Irishman. Yeah, so we felt pretty good then. And do you guys think we were going to score again?
I actually did. I thought
I did too.
Yeah, I thought the momentum was finally there. That was the most energy that stadium has had in a long time.
I'm thinking too that, you know, Philadelphia got hammered 6-0 at altitude in the middle of the week too. Like, they're not going to want to bother. Like, screw it, we'll just go home and recoup.
Yeah, I thought we were on the way probably to a 3-1 win at that point. But, you know, well, we'll talk about 5 minutes later here in a minute. But, you know, the way the subs, the Hector sub, and then the Owen sub, I thought was really good, and changed the way we played in a more direct way. And we've all been on Josh Wolf's ass this year and going back to last year on things, but I thought he pushed the right buttons last night. And when throwing the curveball of Jean going down, still was able to put the team in a position to play well and be dangerous, which was nice to see.
Yeah, the people around me were doing the...
Sorry, I was going to finish the thought real quick. To score the 2 goals without Dreyusi on the field was nice. Because I know everybody can talk about, oh, Sebastian came back and we looked better. Y'all, we scored without him on the field.
Yeah.
So I think that's a positive to take away from this whole experience last night, too.
Yeah, I think so. Kind of lost my train of thought there.
Sorry.
Well, I actually think my scorching hot take is that I think we played better before Drewsy came on. And I think taking off O'Brien kind of, it took away, like, our verticality and attack, because Emmy just doesn't provide that. And it kind of made us slower, more compact in a way that I thought hindered our ability to attack them.
But
I don't think that's a mark on Drewsy. I think that's more taking off O'Brien.
I came out of the game last night wanting to see a lineup with O'Brien, and Wolf on the wings with Drusy at his normal 10 spot. Because I think Owen's a better player when he's able to play further outside.
Agreed.
Yeah.
I think his just like decision making so much better when he's on the wing. And we need somebody who can get forward with speed and pace, especially like I'm sure everybody's talked about it by now, but like the wrinkle that off of a corner where Stuver gets the ball, he's immediately looking to chuck it downfield. Has just been such a like breath of fresh air for a team that usually has so much trouble getting the ball out of the back.
Hey, look, the Broncos need a quarterback next year, so if he wants to play, that would be great. Because the dude's got a cannon for his right arm. I think you mentioned we're talking about Owen, and you mentioned adding the verticality with his speed. For me too, it's I think being out on the wings, he doesn't have to think as much. He could just react and play. Whereas when they're parked in the middle, you know, he's asked to drive the car a little more. And I'm not so sure that's what he can do or wants to do in this system that we're playing right now.
No. And I mean, we had to deal with the, at least in my section, the onslaught of the Owen comes on again. And, you know, I was never like a Owen's a Nepo baby type of person, but I do. He has been struggling a little bit for me lately, but at a great, you know, he still had a couple of like, you know, I'm a youth player or I'm still learning kind of moments, but you know, had a great game for me.
Yeah. And I go back to 2022, right? When he played a decent amount, he played out on the right wing when he was playing more. And that was where we saw success for him, I think. And where he was the most helpful for this club. So I would like to see more of that. You know, sure, we still got Finley too, which a little surprised we didn't see him last night at some point. I think he may have been planned to come in, but the Hector sub probably forced the hand there to keep him on the bench. And eventually we're going to have to talk about when do we see Fodre if he gets healthy, or Farkalun, or is Farkalun going to spend all year on FC2 and we're just going to burn these call-ups?
So I did go to the FC Toe match on Friday, and CJ is definitely playing like somebody who's coming off an injury. Guessing it's a hamstring type of thing from the way he was moving, but it was, you can tell from the way people run when they don't go into like a full sprint, especially on the wing. And they're stopping a little early and they're not doing like the full leg extension, that they're still a little injured. So I wouldn't be shocked if we don't see him for another 2-3 weeks to a month, just to give him some game recovery time plan at FC Toe. But I did notice too, a little bit on the kind of like Rigoni thing, like O'Brien's a little, let's go a lot loose on the ball, and he doesn't always make the best decisions. He's really, really fast, and he does occasionally make like really nice plays. And you can watch different sets of time in that game yesterday, and Philadelphia is literally just like, okay, we'll sag in. Rigoni, beat us. Go ahead. Just we'll wait. Go ahead. Especially in a couple of the Stuver kind of, you know, grab and chuck them deep. Mm-hmm. And when we're playing those switch balls, in build up, especially through ring where we suck the opposing defense over to one side of the field and then hit it back, that's part strategy, but they're also over covering to the side we're on because they're like, well, Rigoni's not going to do anything with the ball. We're not going to worry about him. And I think that's a problem we need to solve probably sooner rather than later.
Yeah.
But no, I don't have the answer.
I mean, the answer is put his ass on the bench. Earn your fucking playing time.
Yeah.
I don't care that you have a DP salary.
I do. It makes it worse. Well, but
to a degree, yes. But I'm talking about there are folks who say, well, your DP got to be on the field. I think there are folks out there with that mentality. And I'm sitting here going, I don't give a shit. If you're not playing well, sit on the fucking bench. And he is not providing anything to this team. Even ostensibly, remember the short corner we took last night? Where we tried to set something up and Rigoni just fired it into somebody on the at the outside of the 18, as opposed to putting it up all over the top. Like that shit continuously happens with him. where he's supposed to be a guy who can swing in a ball for a set piece. And that was my, honestly, my biggest concern when John went out last night was who the hell is taking set pieces for us now?
That is another thing. Owen's halfway decent at too.
So I think sit his ass, man, and let some other guys get a chance. Do I think we're getting more out of Ethan Finley and Owen on the right if you move over into the left? Probably. You're not really – you have a guy who's just taking up space and sucking up the ball. And as you mentioned, defenders aren't worrying about him, so it makes the rest of the attack hurt. I want him out. And I don't mean like – yeah, I'd like his contract to expire too, which I think it does at the end of the year. But until he earns the spot back, put him on the bench.
Yeah. I like the idea of Owen on the right because I think that – I actually think Owen's best quality is his long-range passing and his crossing. And I think that that's the biggest argument for playing him on the wing than playing centrally. I think Wolf had a comment in the press conference last night about, like, I'm going to paraphrase because I didn't write it down. But basically the idea that, like, Rigoni makes a lot of, like you see it. Like, you see, like, what he's trying to do, and you see, like, you know, he makes, like, one or two, like, good steps, and then, like, the end product isn't there. And I think that's always been kind of what happens in Rigoni's career is that teams trick themselves into thinking that, like, he's going to eventually figure that out. And at some point, you just have to acknowledge that at his age, he's not going to do that. Like, he is what he is. Like, he's, you know, he's physical and he's fast and he has a lot of technical ability, but it doesn't really matter when you're overcooking crosses by 10 yards and you're not getting the ball on net and you're not doing any of the other things that actually result in goals. And it just kind of, you know, as much as you want him to do better, we have so much evidence that he's just never going to be more than what he is. And at some point, you know, especially for a team that doesn't have that much invested in him past this season, I don't think, you know, why not play CJ over there? Why not play Jimmy over there? Like, let's at least play the young guys and see what we have, especially when, like, I feel like the club's already doing a huge disservice to Jimmy by putting him on the bench for first team matches and not playing him. And also not letting him play for the FC2 team. Like, if we're going to develop him, he has to get on the field, and he's not going to get on the field. And he didn't get on the field this weekend.
No. And, you know, he's kind of a project pick, right? Those guys need playing time. That's what FC2 is for. And I watched them this weekend. They're missing a lot of their firepower from last year. They're going to have trouble scoring goals. They need somebody to come out and actually handle and make an impact. So hopefully it's one weekend. Like, he's allowed four of those call-ups and he can only play in two of them anyways. So, you know, hopefully it's a weird short-term thing, but yeah, I'm not impressed with that at the moment.
Yeah. Ideally he plays Tuesday night.
Yeah, I think so.
And gets some time.
Oh, yeah. If he plays Tuesday night, then, like, there needs to be, like, some serious questions about what the plan is for this team.
But yep. At the same time, I don't think we learn anything Tuesday night because the level of competition that they're playing is pretty bad. I know it's Open Cup and upsets happen, but they're playing effectively a semi-pro team Tuesday night. So considering what Jimmy did in the preseason against some first-team guys for MLS teams, you would think that he should be able to play well. Hopefully the team will play well enough to get through without much of a problem Tuesday night.
Well, and if he doesn't, who cares?
Yeah,
that's just fair. A data point.
Yeah, like okay. I'd rather play him against the team and just, like, kick the shit out of them and just, like, be like, oh, okay, this guy actually can't score because, like, I don't know, like, like, if we put Rigoni as a striker against even them, like, do you think he's scoring goals getting the ball on that?
I don't know.
I mean, the silence there is deafening because none of us is, like, really sure that, like, he can do that.
Yeah, I was actually I was trying to come up with who your description of Rigoni reminded me of, and it's sort of like, not, you know, one for one, but bizarro, like Adama Traore a few years ago, where he would, like, go around five people and run through three more, and then he would cross it 900 feet over the goal, and he's like this really exciting electric player, but, like, you know, once he gets to the moment that matters, it never comes off.
Yeah, exactly. Like, it just, like, they can have all the technical ability, but they don't actually link it to anything that results in, like, actual goals.
Yeah, and, you know, like you said, when we're going, okay, well, look at all these things he does, he gets in good spots, That was fine in 2000 or in 2022 and maybe a little bit of last year, but like at this point, sorry, pal. We know what you are.
Yeah.
And like I said, other teams are just going, hey, yeah, we don't believe this guy can beat us. Other teams tell you where your weak points are. Listen to them. Anyway, we got all that negativity out. You guys want to do some more? We're talking about.
Let's go.
We're talking about.
We're suffering. Let's do this.
We're talking about some DPs or a DP who hasn't earned his spot on the field. I've been very unimpressed with Alex Ring the past couple weeks or so. I don't know if we necessarily need to bench him or anything, but a lot of shocking giveaways, a lot of, you know, kind of blaming people for things that I don't think are their fault and not doing his, you know, I'm the captain, even though I don't have the armband type of stuff that he did a lot of last year. And, you know, I usually look at him and just go, oh, you're just a very good soccer player generally. And a lot of that kind of quality has gone away in the past couple weeks. Any thoughts, Charles, you want to lead off?
Yeah, I think sometimes players just attempt to do too much, and it feels like he's just kind of attempting to do too much and being too involved. Some extent, like, it's just bad luck. Like, it's bad luck that he was on the edge of the wall when that ball got struck and his arm is just, like, you know, 3 inches off of where it's supposed to be. But at the same time, like, for somebody who started the match with the captain's armband and in theory is like the leader of the team and kind of like the person who always gets penciled in as long as they're healthy, like, he has to be better. He just does. And, you know, Father Time's undefeated and it's starting to feel like that's starting to work against him.
Yeah, I don't love how often we've been having to say that on this podcast, but it is true. Brad, any thoughts on Alex Ring?
I mean, outside of the cross he had last week, that was the goal for Cascante, I don't know that he's brought us much this year. He's been actively bad. The foul against St. Louis was egregious that led to the PK last week. Last night, a little more unlucky with the hand out. And could have been outside the box, as we talked about already. But the question, though, becomes, let's say Drewsy's healthy. What's your ideal midfield? Because
I think that's where you get real sticky with him.
Yeah. It seemed like we played better. I don't know that Danny and Johan play well together when they're both back. That was something we saw last year when they kind of played the double pivot that Alex and Danny were playing in the second half last night. Danny and Valencia tend to be on top of each other and play in the same spaces. And that's not necessarily what we need to be happening, because Johan, as much as I love him defensively, he does slow up the game in progression. He takes longer to make decisions. He doesn't really want the ball at his feet. And you don't really have that problem with either Alex or Danny back there. So I don't know what the midfield looks like going forward if Drewsy's able to start next week.
Do we think he's going to start next week?
I don't think so. I think he's probably 2 weeks away. I think he starts the next home game.
Yeah, that's kind of where I'm at.
My gut says he plays a half next week. But when he's on the field, even, I don't know what the best combination is right now.
Yeah. And I think that's going to get weird too, kind of feeling it out with Diego Rubio too, because he's not going to play just that simple up top level that we had Zardes playing. So you're going to have some kind of mixing and matching and spaces getting moved around. And if Rigoni's on the field and all sorts of stuff like this. All right.
Well. Yeah. And the only other real option to throw out there is Owen, but we've kind of seen like the Danny and Owen midfield just doesn't work. Like, there just isn't enough like ball retention there. And so it's kind of a general problem that Austin has, that we don't have midfielders who work together or that make sense together. And that's kind of the biggest thing holding this team back.
It is a bit of a problem.
especially when you're trying to play three of them at all times and not being able to have three that work together. Like, that's an issue.
It's a big Big issue. Just a little bit. I guess we gotta cover the tying goal. Brad, you seem to have some strong opinions about this. You want to take us through it?
I mean, the defensive breakdown was the same similar thing that happened last week. Get inside our own box, ball goes across, and there's just no one there on the back post to cover the play. And as much accolade as we want to give Hector for the way he played offensively last night, moving the ball forward, you got to look at that goal. He had a chance to sweep the ball out of there, and he had seemingly no idea where he was, and he was slow to track back on the ball, slow to fall back when it was coming back across the box especially. I think if you really look at it, to me, I put the goal on Hector for just kind of seeming lost in his own six. Cascante wasn't great in there either, but it's the same type of defensively disorganized goal that we've seen this team give up year after year. And we didn't see that against, obviously, Seattle. We held scoreless. And even in week one against Minnesota, I don't necessarily believe – I thought we were pretty defensively strong and held our shape well. But the last 2 weeks, the tying goal both times have come from just complete chaos and people not knowing where they're supposed to be.
Yeah.
So I'm going to push back on that a little bit because that's a wrinkle based on the formation of how Austin plays. Like, I don't think that's a indictment on Hector as much as it is that, like, even in the first half and in the lead up to that goal, like, Philly always had an extra person open. Like, that was just how they were playing and setting up on the backside. And at some point, like, that is the responsibility of either the backside winger or the backside 10 to try to cover that person. And that just wasn't happening.
So I think that's fair, but go back and look at the play again, though, and watch where the back line is, the back four, how deep they are compared to where Hector is when that pass starts coming across. He's about 3 or 4 yards up the field from everybody else. And looking away from where his mark should be. So I for me, that goal is on him. And look, I think Hector Jimenez plays hard. I'm advocating for him to start next week. But we would be crazy to say that defensively he's the strongest option we have back there, because he never has been.
No, and he also, like, this play starts with him sort of trying to, like, half pass, half clear the ball.
Yeah.
Philly recovers it right in front of Ring, and I actually think we had – this isn't like a VAR goes back and should fix it thing, but there's a refereeing error where the guy basically kicks Alex Ring's face level so he can't head the ball. Should be a high boot free kick to us, whatever. Get on with your lives as soon as it doesn't get called. But yeah, then they come down the side, and I think I just watched this back, like, as we were talking. We almost get really, really unlucky here that Stuver touches the ball, because the person it was going to at the back post, I think, was offside. And Stuver actually tips it back to a guy who is onside. And I mean, I'm not blaming Stuver for that, right? Like, balls in your area, get it the fuck out. But I wonder if that had gone through him, if we actually would have been lucky enough to get them to call offside. But yeah, it's another broken play. And, you know, we talked about it earlier. Defenses hate not being set. We don't attack them enough. Like, we turn people over and we don't get enough chaos. Okay, nobody on the D knows where the fuck they are. They're trying to figure it out. We just pull it back out and go, no, you guys get set up, and we'll go ahead and play against that. And it's infuriating, because if you watch any MLS game, you watch Premier League game, goals get scored this way. Just wait for a moment of chaos and for somebody to screw up a little bit, and then just go attack.
Yeah, and as happy as I was in the second half to see us move forward and attack, by the way, shots last night, we had 13 total. We've had 16 in the previous three games combined. So we nearly doubled our total shots for the year last night, which was great to see the attack going. And most of that was in the second half. But the counterpoint for that for us is we are going to be more disorganized in the back, and we're not fast enough in the back if a team really hits us on the counter. So that's where it could look a little more like 2022 at times, some more higher scoring games if we continue to progress offensively. But yeah, that goal drove me crazy because I think it was preventable. And then there were a few other times last night where we had players tracking back and having to make some fantastic plays. Cascante twice, and one of them an undeserved yellow. Holy shit, is that the worst yellow I've ever seen in my life?
It's not the worst yellow I've ever seen in my life, but that was, yeah, right in front of me and you. And I thought people were going to start like throwing crap at the ref.
I don't understand how Cascante sliding to block the ball where he makes no contact with the defender is a yellow. It was dumbfounding to see that happen.
I was on the opposite end, and I could tell that wasn't a foul. Like, it was so obvious that he got the ball and got there first. And it was – that was when everybody just, like, shook their heads out of, like, what are we doing here?
It wasn't even that he got there first. I don't think he made contact with the defender at all.
Like, 2 steps after Cascante gets the ball, the defender, like, trips – or the offensive player, like, trips over him.
Yeah, the defender turned into him to run into the box, right?
Yeah.
But Cascante didn't initiate that contact.
No. I wasn't saying he did. I was just saying, like, there is contact. So I guess let's talk about the ref, since we're on this. And this was actually the piece that I wanted to springboard on anyways. It's not just that he calls a foul there, and it's so obviously not a foul. I think he basically gives this yellow card because the crowd is booing him. Because if you go back and look, like, he calls the foul, and then there's, like, 5 seconds, and everybody's like, you know, yelling shit at the ref. And then he kind of like thinks about it for a second, pulls out a card and gives it to him. And like, there were a lot of like, I don't know, it's a foul. I don't know what isn't a foul. A lot of pullbacks in this game that are very clearly, you know, Philadelphia players stopping a counter with a cynical foul, professional foul. It's a yellow card every time. Read the fucking rule book, watch a game. And, you know, there's other things like the Cascante thing. There was another one where a guy, like, you know, basically shoved him to the ground in our own box and the ref doesn't see it. And, you know, comes up to him later and is like, what happened? And he's like, well, the guy shoved me down. I was right in front of you. And just, you know, we talk a little bit about like, okay, ref missed this call, ref missed that call. They don't have control of the games at all. And like Charles said, this is why you see people. Or Brad, it might have been you who said, like, each team looks like they want to fucking fight each other by the end of the game.
Yeah.
And that's really the responsibility of the ref is to, you know, maybe you miss a foul call or a corner kick or whatever, like we said, but, you know, you can't have professional athletes like coming to blows week by week by week. That doesn't look good for your sport or your league or anything like that. All right.
Yeah. And ultimately, like, that's actually a big player safety problem at some mm-hmm. point, because like at some point it is going to become an issue of players not thinking that the refs are going to protect them and they're going to protect themselves.
Yeah. And I think that's what happened with Obreon. Cause like, you know, the guy fouls him extra hard. It's a yellow card. There's nothing wrong with like the call the ref made. It's everything else about the game that he's like, well, shit, this guy's going to keep doing this to me. And you're not going to do anything about it. And I mean, it's sort of, it turns into hockey rules, right? If you're not going to do anything about it, I will take this into my own hands.
Yeah. Whenever there's a power vacuum on the field, like that's just going to happen. And that is the biggest problem with the ref so far. There's also a call like at the end of the second half where like Danny has the ball on the edge of the box. And yeah, like Danny's looking to get a foul there because he's trying to create a free kick. But also like, he was in front of the player and the player barrels through his back and it's a foul.
Yeah.
Like both of those things can be true of like, yes, he's looking to get a foul call there, but also like he's objectively fouled.
Yeah. Well, that's sort of the, like the one that led to the penalty, right? Like if that's a foul that leads to the penalty, so is the one on Danny, like both or neither, pick it. I don't care.
Yeah.
Just
and, like,
be consistent.
Yeah. And like, I know Brad talks about this all the time of like, if a foul's in the box, it's a penalty. If it's called anywhere else on the field, then like there was one moment that sticks out on my mind of like Julio got rugby tackled by 2 players at the same time on a corner kick.
Yep.
And gets brought down. And then like 2 minutes later, Julio like drags down a player in much the same way, just by himself. And it's a foul out there. But the 2 guys pulling down an attacker in the box where the ball is going isn't a foul and a penalty. Like, it's just asinine to, like, not call those things.
Yeah, and I don't think we're ever going to see replacement refs call those sorts of penalties, even though, like you said, they should be penalties, but, you know, they're just going to go, oh, yeah, that's, you know, jostling in the box, because they're not doing a very good job of it, but, like, the goal is obviously the refs don't want to be the headline, but they keep being the headline by trying to not be the headline.
And I think the most frustrating thing is Don Garber and leadership of this league don't give a shit.
No.
I don't know if you saw the quote this week. Garber, I guess, had a roundtable, and at one point he said something to the effect of, well, we've actually received feedback from players that the refs are doing a pretty good job, and so we don't see any need to, like, rush this negotiation. And the MLS Players Association Twitter had to quote tweet that and go, actually, these refs are shit.
Yeah, that was really funny.
Yeah, I'm not sure if you saw, but, like, Christian Roldan yesterday after the Seattle match, which had some dubious officiating, specifically was quoted as saying, we need the experienced refs back.
Good. And honestly, I don't think Garber in the front office give a shit about what the fans say. So the only way this gets fixed is if the players start getting loud, in my opinion.
Yeah. And I mean, like, we talked about it, you know, we talked about refs all the time, even when we had the regular MLS ones. Hey, you know, they're going to miss calls. They're not great at their jobs, but, you know, generally people aren't, you know, you don't have teams coming to blows at the end of games. You know who the fuck's in charge.
There's a huge difference in quality, though, between Ismail Elfath, who was the fourth fucking official in the World Cup final, versus the guy last night who, from what I could tell based on researching it, was reffing U17 games 2 years ago.
Or the dude against City who looked like he was on the me level of overweight plan right now, and couldn't run around for shit. And I mean, they, like, you know, we sort of mentioned the ring foul on Azale Jackson, and yeah, it's a foul. It's in the box. It's a penalty. Like, it's a little soft and it's annoying to give up, but, like, there's nothing wrong with the call. The guy was diving around the entire first half of the fucking game and should have been at least yellow carded.
Yep.
So there's just no control whatsoever. There's no expectation. Like, you know, we have Ted Uncle referee a game. We might not like it, but we sort of have a general idea of what to expect. You don't just go into every game like, well, I hope the thing that I do every game isn't a foul now. Or I hope that guy doesn't cleat me in the back of the legs and, like, ruin my career and nothing gets called. It's fucking ridiculous. And, you know, we know the league isn't going to do anything to fix it. And it seems like the league's trying to make this worse rather than better.
Well, that's just MLS's motto for the most part.
I think the league is just more interested in union busting than they are in trying to get a better product on the field at this point. Like,
well, then call the fucking Pinkertons and speed it up.
I am shocked that the Pinkertons. I am still shocked that the Pinkertons still exist in this day and age. I did not know that.
I didn't know,
like,
that
a year ago. Yeah, like, I think Google. I want to say it was Google. I don't know. I forget which company it was, but, like, somebody, like, hired the Pinkertons to help with something, and I was like,
Starbucks?
I was like,
I think I remember this. I think it was Starbucks.
That sounds right. And then I was kind of like, I'm sorry, the villains in Red Dead Redemption 2 are still around? Like, how does this happen? But that's what it feels like. It feels like MLS is more interested in breaking the union than they are in actually, like, trying to make things better. And it doesn't surprise me that the Players Association is having to come out with comments like that, because they kind of know that, like, they're next.
I saw that tweet and I had to, like, next. Triple check that was the real Players Union account. I thought it was, like, a, you know, LOL parody thing. And then I was like, oh shit, no, they're really like, no, guys, we're not happy with this at all.
Yeah. And you need more of that, though. And you need players like Roldan yesterday and other big name players in this league to go on the record. Hell, you need Messi. Somebody, Suarez, whoever, to go on the record with an ESPN, because that's what Garber and them care about. They care about the fucking big time coverage stuff. They don't care about the local guys yelling and screaming, as evidenced by the reporter in Cincinnati who got suspended for absolutely nothing, or had her credential revoked for absolutely fucking nothing this week.
So yeah, I think we're going to try to do an episode midweek with Seth, and I'm going to ask him a little bit more about that because I think he probably has a lot more detail than any of us do.
Yeah, from what I've seen in the report that came out last night, ESPN actually ran a report on it last night on the website from Jeff Carlisle. Yep. And it's going back to my journalism-ish career and credentialing of media back in the day. It's horseshit. And no professional sports organization worth its salt would ever revoke a credential for that reason. This is MLS as a whole, and I will include Austin FC in this, is because they are just a subsidiary of MLS considering the franchise model. It's an organization that wants to always, always control every little piece of every action. It has no interest in outside influence. And the only, like I keep saying, the only real leverage for outside influence, if the advertisers don't care, and you know Apple doesn't give a shit about the ref quality, the only real influence comes from the players themselves, because MLS has to eventually start recruiting players to come play. And if players don't feel safe on the field because the level of refereeing being adjudicated during a game isn't keeping them safe, then that's where you could actually see change.
Well, wasn't there too like a big directive, or I don't know if this is just a rumor or whatever, where they basically told Apple to stop like showing certain angles of things and stop complaining about calls on the broadcast and stuff like that?
Apple's been told to shut the hell up. Yes.
Okay. Yeah. The announcers were told specifically not to mention it.
Yeah. That's what I was trying to figure out with the like Montreal red card. Like, are they just not showing the good angle because they think it's going to piss MLS off, or like, do these people just not know what the fuck they're doing, or both? I assume it's both, but
I mean, and Seth could probably confirm this, right? But I'm 95% confident Adrian Healy is no longer a commentator for Apple TV and MLS because he was too critical of this league last year.
Oh, 100%. I think he's more or less tweeted the same thing.
Yeah. So.
Yeah, that's not even a question to me. Yeah. Like, that's 100% what happened.
Which just goes back to the point of MLS trying to control everything, right? Hey, fuck this guy who is a world-renowned soccer broadcaster who's done the damn World Cup because we don't like the fact that he's not towing the line on every little thing.
Adrian's been broadcasting like as long as MLS has existed, more or less.
Yeah. He started with the Revs. Like when the Revs started, he came over to be their broadcaster.
The more I look at this, and you know, it's not just the ref situation, it's the US Open Cup thing, it's kind of everything right now. It reminds me of, because you know, Garber's talking about like we want to be just like the NFL, which good fucking luck, the NFL is more powerful than like 80% of the countries on this planet.
Yeah.
But it's like your friend who like sells, you know, a few, you know, ounces of weed here and there, and he thinks he's Scarface. And like that's what how Don Garber is coming across to me whenever he talks about shit like that. And he's like, or like the union busting over, you know, what's essentially what, like $1 million, $1.5 million that was in dispute initially. And I'm sure it's once you start dragging out the dirty laundry and shit, the stuff just gets worse and worse and worse. But like the initial ask that we saw, and you know, we don't know if this is true or whatever, but the initial ask that we sort of saw or think we saw from the referees was like, why the fuck are you fighting this? That's nothing.
I think what Seth had burned, because Seth obviously has more contacts on this than we do, but
yeah,
he pretty much confirmed a couple of weeks ago that it's less than $100,000 a team. So literally like the minimum salary, one minimum senior roster spot per team.
Yep.
Is what we're talking about here.
Yep. And that's before we even get into the fucking roster issues. all right. Anything else on the game you guys want to cover?
We haven't talked about Zerussi's run out yet.
No, let's do that.
Yeah. Nice to see him back out there. I thought he looked comfortable. He still drops a little too deep at times for me, which I understand is to get him the ball at his feet, but it also just takes him out of the play. But otherwise, he looked Sebastian Jarrusi-ish, which was nice to see.
Yeah, I think he's further along than I expected for a cameo appearance. I kind of mentioned Fodry's running like a guy who's coming off injury. And that's what I expected to see out of Seba. It looked like he was moving pretty good. Maybe not 100%, but he's not like 50 or anything. I'm with you. I expect we'll wait till he's in a, or for a home game to start him, but definitely would expect to see him as an option off the bench next week. Yeah, I was, you know, generally, okay, this is a good sign. It doesn't look like he's given up or, you know, anything like that. Charles, any thoughts?
Yeah, I thought the same. I thought he actually seemed more comfortable, like, in a full sprint than I was expecting.
Yep.
And then at the end, he took kind of a long shot with his left that Andre Blake had, like, a really interesting reaction of, like, looking over at him, like, did you really just do that? Kind of a thing.
I mean, it wasn't far away.
The only thing that I, and this is not a criticism necessarily, but there was a play when he was out there that the ball kind of went over to the corner and he just full on sprinted to it. And everybody was kind of, and you could tell that like none of the players on the field thought he was going to get to it, but he did. And it led to a counterattack by Philly because our defenders were just like not prepared to run back yet.
Yeah.
And that was kind of the thing when I was like, oh no, he feels good. Like he feels good enough to like really push himself at this point.
So that play actually made me pretty fucking mad because there was no reason to keep the ball in play. If you're Sebas there, just let it roll out. When it happened, I'm sitting here trying to understand why would you even touch that ball in the first place? Even if it rolls out and it's our ball, cool, we get a throw in from right there. If not, cool, they get a throw in from right by the corner flag. Okay. I didn't understand that. And you're absolutely right. It led directly to a counterattack that I think at one point was a 3-on-2. And it turned into a pretty dangerous play in the box against us. So, but yeah, otherwise he was good. Like it was nice to see him back out there. And I was shocked he played. I did not expect to see him on the field last night.
Well, and he had a very nice jump to reaching for a header from what would have been another assist for Owen towards the end of the game. So he does look good.
Well, he also had a header that deflected off of a defender, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
That he redirected on goal. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. He actually just like muscled a dude. I think he missed it near post.
I'm sorry. Was he the one who had the shot that the Philadelphia defender blocked with their head and then immediately went down? Or was that Danny?
That was Danny's rocket off of the guy.
That honestly was one of the scarier moments I've had in the stadium because he got hit and just immediately went down. And I was like, oh no, he's down. Like he might be out. Like he might have lost consciousness for a second.
Yeah, like he almost went down too theatrically that you were like, wait, is this how people like, wait, what? Hold on. But yeah, like at first I was just like, oh, the guy's wasting time. And then I was like, oh no, like I saw the replay and I was like, oh no, he got smoked.
Mm-hmm.
He like ducks his head at the last second. It hits him in the face instead of the head or the like part of the head you'd want to the extent you want to get hit in the head anywhere, part of the head that you, you want to get hit in. Yeah, we did have a little nice shot from Riggles there too, towards the end. Philadelphia had a few counters, like we mentioned, and I don't know, you know, they looked dangerous, but you know, nothing really turned into a great opportunity or anything.
They had one cut in the second half that the guy just blew right in front of a kind of a somewhat open net.
Which one?
They had one play in the second half where the ball ended up at one of their players' feet, maybe 8 yards out.
Yeah, this is not a cutback, but the guy's coming away from the goal and is basically trying to, like, as he's falling backwards, shoot it.
Yeah.
That's why it goes 90 feet over the bar.
Yeah, we got a little lucky on that one. Everything else I thought was, yeah, besides the goal they scored, nothing too dangerous in there.
Yeah, I mean, that's a dangerous chance, but the way the guy's feet are set, like, yeah, if you put that in good for you, that's a very hard chance to actually capitalize on. All right. Anything else you guys want to touch on before we do the fun stuff?
I'm good.
Cool. Charles, you want to go first on stock rising?
Yeah, I can go first. I think my stock rising was seeing Gallagher at left back again. And just the way he was able to, which, I mean, we talked about this before, but the way he was kind of able to affect the attack by using his underlap to get into that channel really put a lot of pressure on the Philly defense. And, you know, I think that's a lot of hope when Dessler comes here, is that we get to see more of Gallagher on the left.
Yeah. Sounds good to me. Brad?
I'm going to go to the other side, and I'll say Hector Jimenez.
Yeah.
It's a guy who hasn't gotten a whole lot of minutes in the last 2 years and came in last night and put in a really nice shift. I still worry a lot about his defensive capability. However, you have to credit the fact that he came in, moved the ball forward, and we just seemed to flow better. Once he came in and we made a couple of lineup shifts with Danny falling back a little bit towards a little deeper midfield spot, and just thought we played better.
Yeah, I'm going to piss everybody off and say halftime adjustment Wolf. Because I thought the a lot of the time we say this, we're like, well, why didn't you do that from the get-go? I think this is actually a decent job of reading the game and saying, hey, here's what we need. We need more control in midfield because we're not touching the fucking ball at all. And we made a good tactical adjustment. And it wasn't something that everybody was like, well, we should have been doing this from the start. Like, I think most people were happy with the lineup when it came out. Yep. So it was going on, made an adjustment, and it worked out, and we were easily the better team in the second half. So we do sometimes say nice things about Josh Wolf on the show.
Yeah, I actually had no problem with Wolf last night. I thought he got most everything right.
Still didn't wear Verde.
Yeah. Well, I think he's not allowed to if we're wearing it. Right?
I mean,
no, I think that's a myth.
Yeah, I think that's a myth. Because I'm pretty sure I've seen like other coaches do that.
Well, I also think that Josh, like, I think he's wearing black because it's slimming, because he just only wears black now, except for against St. Louis. He had this like great overcoat on, and had we had a show after that, my stock rising was going to be Josh Wolf's fashion sense.
Is it the same overcoat he wore in Seattle the week before?
It might have been. I'd have to go back to the Seattle tape to figure it out.
Let's say Seattle when he was going on too. It was quality.
It was very Premier League manager fashionista jacket.
Huge improvement.
Yeah,
huge improvement. Those guys dress much better than MLS coaches do, except for Jim Curtin, who went full suit last night, which I appreciate. Yeah,
that was weird. Not like a coach wearing a suit. Jim Curtin wearing a suit was weird.
Yeah, he's supposed to be in like a hoodie, man.
Yeah. But no, I mean, we like kind of general, I think the past couple weeks we've been playing better. We did ask them to stop being like fucking boring and terrible. So now they're at least interesting and, you know, not great, not terrible, interesting. You know, we got stuff to talk about. We're not like that game against Seattle happened.
I legitimately had fun watching the second half last night, which is something I haven't been able to say in quite a while. So,
you know, it was a fun match. I had a fun time. The vibes were really good. Like, it was positive.
I kind of feel like we've had a few of those in the past, you know, season plus or so. I guess we'll call it season whenever expectations have been lowered, whenever we're like, we're playing this really good team. There's no way we're going to beat them. And everybody's kind of moping and it's going to rain and all this stuff. And then we go and like team actually plays kind of well. And, you know, we have a good time. I wonder if that's like just a weird expectation thing with the team or just a coincidence, or you know, I'm only noticing it because I'm like, well, maybe it's going to be one of those games. But I believe we have the same number of points as Philadelphia, who are obviously a premier franchise as far as
Philly is currently on 3 points as well on three draws. Yeah.
Yep.
We played one more match than them because their Seattle match got rained out.
Yeah. I would also point out they've been playing midweek games the entire season so far.
Trying to be positive. Anyway, Brad, stock falling.
I mean, the obvious one here, if it could go any lower, is Rigoni, right?
I think he went lower.
So we moved Rigoni to the pink sheets. That's what I'm hearing. It's you can't start him right now. You just can't. We have better options on the bench that will impact the play on the field for us. And Rigoni, at this point, unless he's a midweek starter or somebody who's in for an injury or maybe a late sub, he's not worth having on the field for this team. And if you can sell him for pennies in the summer window, you do it. If somebody in South America wants him, you know, I know there's a couple of clubs down there who might potentially be interested. I never thought we'd get money for Romagna in the offseason, and we got something for him. I'm of the opinion if you can get anything for Ragone before his contract runs out this summer or this winter, do it. Take the pennies and move on.
Yeah, I mean, if nothing, we get an international roster spot back.
You get a roster spot back, and you know what? Okay, here's $500,000 or whatever, or $200,000, whatever. Fine.
Go invest. And the DP spot opens up too.
Say what?
And the DP spot opens up too.
Yeah. So
that depend on how much we sell him for, because it would have to be like cap hit minus or whatever. We would have to sell him for enough to like get it back into non-DP territory. I don't remember how all this works.
Well, we have enough. I think we have enough GAM to buy down that if we needed to.
Okay.
Because the DP spot, once you're above, like, it only counts like $600,000 against the cap. So that wouldn't be a problem. I think it's just more a matter of, is there anybody that wants him? Maybe I know there's feelings in Sao Paulo, like maybe they'd want him back a little. Their fans really liked him. So
I think we're being optimistic there. I mean, at least Romagna is what, like 22, 23.
Yeah.
And you know, he was getting paid, but he wasn't on Riggle's money.
For sure. But that's my point, is I don't necessarily think the worst thing this front office could do is sit here and say, well, we want X amount of dollars back because we paid X amount of dollars for him. At this point, get what you can and cut your losses.
Sure, I agree with that.
Yeah,
I'm just not sure the market's there. But, I mean, hey, that's not our job. That's Roto's job.
It only takes one.
Yep, exactly. Tim Tebow draft pick.
really? You've got to go there?
I mean, it's really? My go-to on It Only Takes One. it wasn't anything personal.
Tell you the story of what happened that draft night with me one night.
No, not on air. sorry, Brad, did you do a stock falling?
Yeah, I did Ragone to start off.
Oh, yeah, yeah, sorry. I was like, how do we get back on Ragone? Charles, how about you?
I'm going to go with Biru. I think there's a lot of excitement before the match about seeing him full-time as opposed to just kind of like a cameo. And his 45 minutes kind of proved why we've only seen him in cameos.
Yeah. I mean, he was a little interesting against City, but yeah. It's I think he's going to be on the up down a lot this year.
Yeah, I mean, and some of that is just like a function of his age, but like at the same time, like in a team that is kind of in bad shape when it comes to fullbacks right now and isn't getting help until summer, like that's a problem.
Yeah. I did see him at the FCCO match on Friday too, by the way. He's, and you can see it on the field, but he's taller than you would expect. I think my stock falling, I'm going to go for playing Danny forward. Cause we keep trying it in different ways. And I think he's got to be like, you know, maybe not necessarily sitting at the base of midfield, but definitely coming out with space in front of him to dribble. And we've been kind of trying to kick him around in more advanced positions and use his dribbling to start plays and in the offensive set. And I don't think it's working at all, but you guys tell me if I'm wrong. My alternate, if we wanted to go esoteric with this, was that I couldn't give Zardes and Owen my stocks rising for last week and this week, because I think they both deserve at least a shout. Zardes was great against City, and we talked about Owen had a pretty solid game after some downtime this week.
Yeah, we didn't do the podcast last night or last week, but I saw a few people banging on Zardes after that City game, and I'm sitting here going, what game did you watch?
Yeah, that was the best he played since at least July.
Yeah.
And so it was nice to see him running around. He had, you know, he got, what, like 10 minutes last night, and he was pretty good.
Yeah, yeah. That, my only frustration when we have Zardes in the game, he was fine last night, but we seemingly do not know how to play with a hold-up striker.
Nope. Which is weird because we keep going after him.
Yeah. But the idea when you have a guy who can hold up play is that you get runners behind him, right?
Yes.
and then not just stand next to him and hope that he can get the ball? Cool.
Yes, great. No, the ball comes in from midfield to Zardes. He holds it up. He kicks it in behind the fullback. Obreon runs onto it. Bang, we're in.
Yeah.
That's how that works. It's not complicated. Or he passes it back to the midfielder who sends it.
And so many times we just have guys standing around. Same shit last night with a throw in from Gallagher that we're waiting near the end of the match.
Oh, yeah, like the 96th minute.
Yes. Yeah. And we just have guys standing there, not moving around, not doing a damn thing.
Yeah.
It's one of my biggest frustrations with this team is the lack of aggressive movement to get themselves into the right spots.
Yeah. Well, maybe that'll help. Maybe we'll fix that. I don't know. But it is frustrating. And we were very close to like people screaming at each other, arm gesture last night. But we actually kind of fixed it and made some good subs and kind of brought it back from the brink and ended up getting a draw out of it. So,
yeah, you know,
I guess we'll call that a positive, right?
We'll try.
Yeah, we'll try. I'm going to go first on moment of suffering because I felt incredibly terrible the second I saw Zan's face when he went down. And that's like real suffering, not like the soccer made me feel bad. But like you can literally see it's like weighing on him physically, psychologically. Like this is his career, this is his livelihood. And I'm sure that's scary as fuck anytime it happens. So that was hard to watch. Charles, how about you?
So mine was actually after the match. I saw this on Twitter because Phil West posted it. But loss, 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 draw, loss, draw, draw, loss, win, loss, draw, loss, draw, draw, draw is Austin FC's last 17 match results, which is literally half a season. And as Phil pointed out, that would only result in 20 points over an entire season, which would be, I believe, an MLS record for fewest number of points in a season, or at least for a 34-match season. And it just continues that, like, this is the team, this is the coach, these are the results, and nothing is changing this.
Yeah, and that win was DC United at home, and like Wayne Rooney got fired ish for losing that game.
Yeah, that was well after like DC had clearly like quit on their season.
Yeah. But that was the nail in the coffin. All right, Brad, how about you?
I'm gonna read you a quote from Josh Wolf last night. Just because from the game itself, I didn't have a whole lot of suffering. I thought it was besides the first half. But the quote is, the idea is to score goals and win games. No fucking shit.
Like, that's the entire quote?
Yeah. Well, no, it was part of a quote, but
okay.
It's the key part. He got asked about shots and why we didn't have more shots. And he's like, well, I don't know. We had 13 last night. How many do you want us to have? Obviously, we want more, but the idea is to score goals and win games.
Thanks.
Thanks.
Yeah.
Didn't know that's how this fucking sport worked.
They should have looked this up, but don't we only have like 7 or 8 shots on goal this season to go with 5 goals?
It's right around that range.
Okay, I thought we had 5 shots on goal going into the game last night, and obviously we have at least 2.
I think those were the only 2 last night that were on.
I thought so too, but
yes.
So yeah, our shooting efficiency is great. If you want to look at it that way. All right. Anything else you guys want to cover since we're running up on time?
I'm excited for Open Cup Tuesday night.
Are both of you going?
I will be there.
Yes, I'll be there.
Okay. I will definitely be there. I'm going to try to get there a little early and hopefully kind of scope out what everything looks like because I assume they're bringing in bleachers or something.
Yeah,
it'll be interesting.
They didn't tell us. They haven't given out any indication of how many tickets were claimed for the game. So,
yeah.
No, actually, I talked to the guy who sat next to me, and he was like, "I was like, oh, are you going to the game on Tuesday?" And he's like, "No, we didn't apply in time because it was only like what, a 2 or 3 day window."
Yeah,
and I was just like, "Call your rep."
Yeah, I'm sure there's a way to get in. I have an extra right now, so if anybody's listening and needs to go, let me know.
Yeah, I think there's a few floating around.
Yeah, as
there's,
of right now,
there's always a few floating around. I think even as like LB, like I think Los Freitas had some extras too that they got.
Yeah,
for those who are members.
I think Anthem had an email that they were had a few extras too.
Yeah, I'm excited for that, but also the this has nothing to do with Open Cup, but the it kind of does, but it's reinforcing my decision too to drop my season tickets next year because it's just getting way too easy to get tickets to games. So
yeah, I mean you could get supporter section for like whatever the minimum is, $20 plus fees or whatever it was last night.
Yeah, last night
was there were seated upper deck seats last night going for $16 on SeatGeek, which I didn't think was actually possible because I thought 20 was their like minimum.
Wow. What time did you see that?
It was a couple, it was right before the match. I'm trying to remember when exactly it was. But I think it was, I think I might have already been in stadium. It might have been at like 6 or 6:30.
Oh wow.
I mean, that's still, I don't live that far from the stadium. That's easy for me to go down and, you know, pregame with people, and then if there are tickets, there are tickets. If not, I go home.
Yeah, I'm to the point too, like even through, you know, Slack and other, I'm just getting to know people through the years. There I'm finding that there's just, it's way too easy to get tickets. And usually for less than what I pay for my season ticket. And I've got two season tickets, one of which I often just give away to friends. So it doesn't make financial sense, I think, to keep it up. And with the Open Cup ticketing fiasco, and I'm still calling it a fiasco because it's BS the way they did it.
I have opinions I'm not saying on air.
Yeah, I know why. But I'm to the point where I'm just done. I wrote an email to my ticket rep, right, where the decision for me actually has nothing to do with on the field. I'm a sports fan. I understand there are good seasons and bad seasons. For me, it's the business practices that this team continues to employ. And this is why if I ever see Andy Lochman again, I'm probably just going to flat out tell him to his face, because at some point they need to hear this from people. Like, you are losing my season ticket business because your business practices that you put into place that are kind of bait and switchy and raising prices on us for no reason, to especially an egregious degree last year for season ticket prices, you are not earning my business anymore. And you're not entitled to it.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, one of the things that really pissed me off about it last night while I was getting concessions was, so the get-in price for Austin FC 2 is $10 or $12?
Yeah, I think
it's like $12.50 with fees or something.
Yeah.
So next time you're at the stadium in concessions, look through how many of the beer options are more than that. And then try to act like us getting free tickets to that stadium should be part of our ticket package and that we should be happy of it.
Well, that's the thing, though. If they didn't have, I guess, enough people to apply for tickets, all of us wouldn't even gotten our tickets that we're supposed to for this coming match Tuesday night. Yeah.
Let's also say too, you know, you couldn't go to the match either way, but you know, maybe now you don't apply for your U.S. Open Cup ticket with the little portal because, you know, whatever, you missed the email, you didn't think about it, or you forgot it, or you were just going to sell your ticket if you got it. And, you know, maybe somebody only gives you $16 for it, but that's $16 you didn't have.
Yeah.
That's a beer. There you go. So it's not like, you know, everybody's happy who wanted to go to the game or anything like that. Still a whole giant fuck mess. I did also quite not enjoy the message before the game about, like, we want to give a special thank you to all of our Oak Collective members for your dedicated success and loyalty and shit and whatever the fuck they said before the game. Where, like, Riley just looked at me like, don't say anything. I know what you're thinking. And I was just like, nobody's going to hear me. It's fine. So.
Yeah. This front office, and when I say front office right now, I'm not talking about Roto. I'm not talking about the player personnel side. I'm talking about the business side. This front office has lost me. I'll still go to games. I've got my season tickets for this year. I'll still go to games next year, but it's not going to be all seasons. It's not going to be me buying two tickets. It's not going to be buying concessions. And I haven't bought anything for concessions all year at this point.
Yeah, we haven't bought anything since the first game.
So I think the only money outside of they've gotten from me this year, I did like the New Jersey, so I bought that. But I'm to the point where they have to earn my money for all this extra stuff to make the experience worth it, and they're not doing it. And the worst part for me is when you have questions or when you really push back on stuff, you either get canned responses from undertrained and underpaid ticket reps who also will give you, try to gaslight you, by the way, with the responses that they give. Or, and I'm just going to put them on blast here because I'm at a point where I don't care. Last year, I was complaining about ticket prices and was told I only got a call back from somebody at the ticket office. And I'm not talking about the ticket rep, I'm talking about like their boss. Because, quote, I am who I am in the community because of like the shit I did a few years ago with helping out and things like that. Like, are you kidding me? So if I was anybody else, I wouldn't have gotten a call? That's the way you're running your business?
And I mean, like I had my, I'm not going to, you know, go too into this, but like my call with my ticket rep about the US Open Cup thing was like, I was like, hey man, like, I know you got to give me these answers. Just like give me them. And then like, give me the, you know, somebody's email to like, this isn't you. I know you're not the one making this decision. And he's like, well, I still got to go through it. And I'm like, all right, cool. Like we did that. Can I have like an email address now? And he's like, all right, well, I got to talk to my boss to like, make sure that's okay. Normally we don't do that. I was like, all right, well, I'm making another phone call if I don't hear from you guys by the end of the week. And you know, like I don't really like doing that to people, especially like customer service reps, who I know don't make shit for money. But the business also knows that those people don't make shit for money and they exploit it. So people don't like actually, you know, vet their frustrations or anything like that. Because they're not fucking stupid. Like everybody knows, especially if you've worked like retail or in a restaurant or anything like that, you're always like nicer to those people. So they know, like, when you're like, okay, ticket rep, I know you don't know that, like, ask to talk to somebody above them, because those people do know, and they're the ones making decisions.
But they don't want to have conversations with the average person. I'm talking about the people above the ticket rep.
Yeah.
They flat out don't. And I can tell you that from experience.
Yeah.
So.
Cool. Well, I'm glad we got down this
rabbit hole. I needed that cathartic session. My apologies for.
Yeah, no, I was going to let you run.
Yeah.
I think we'll save the MLS says we can't sell Next Pro jerseys, even though they're letting Colorado sell Next Pro jerseys conversation for midweek.
Yeah. If I could do one plug, though, if you're still listening out there, because we are over our usual time, go buy your Stuver scarf. It's online. I know he posted something about it on his Instagram the other day. All the money goes to support Laundry Project right back in our community, so go grab you one.
We'll put it in the show notes, which I remembered how to use after Seth bothered me about it a couple weeks ago. Or I guess you guys didn't think they existed. I just don't use them. All right, anything else we want to bitch about while we're here? No. Okay.
No, good. I think we've done a pretty good amount of bitching today.
We've done a good amount of bitching, and we're going to have a, I want to say Thursday might be a different day. We're going to try to get a midweek out to you guys. That'll be part US Open Cup, part Seth tells us all the shit we got wrong and what else we're supposed to actually be mad about. Yeah. And we'll go from there. So as always, on behalf of Brad and Charles, thanks for suffering with us. Bye.
Wallace here for Austin Jarrett Stroud. It's Diego for goodness.
They just won't go away.
Oh, he hits the upright again. That's impossible.
The Bears season's going to end on a double doink.
Altidore squares it. Dempsey's missed it. Donovan has it. From hope, there is glory.